Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Home Healthcare News Editor Andrew Donlin. Today our guest is Ari Madoff, the CEO of Verosa, which is one of the largest non-franchised home care companies in the country. In the conversation, we get into the need for more innovative home care business models, the most pressing opportunities and challenges in the space right now, and what growth may look like for Verosa in the near and long-term future. Before we get into that conversation, a word from our sponsor, Care Academy. Care Academy is like the Netflix of healthcare, with more than 500 engaging classes to train, retain, and upskill care staff. Care Academy's unique platform takes your training to the next level, all while saving you time. Easy-to-use mobile classes make learning accessible anytime, anywhere, with support for multiple languages. Level up with specialized certifications in areas from dementia to mental health. Simple compliance reporting makes your audits a breeze. Achieve cost containment using text messaging and interoperability with multiple ecosystem platforms. Visit careacademy.com to start a free trial today. All right, Ari, thank you so much for joining me. Before we get going on any of the specific questions, we'd just love a background on you and your company for the audience that may not be familiar.
Sure thing. Andrew, thanks for having me on the Disrupt podcast, and always a joy to speak with y'all at Home Healthcare News. So, Andrew, I am a North Carolina kid, grew up in a family where father's a doctor, mom went to law school, so I thought growing up I had two options in this world. One was to be a doctor and the other was to be a lawyer. But back in college, had my first entrepreneurial experience helping start a video streaming company, decided after school to go off and go the private equity route, which I did for almost 5 years. And then during that experience, really decided that I missed building a company and growing a team and having the direct responsibility for wins and losses and really creating a culture. And so I went back to business school and public policy school, and coming out of that experience and really through that experience, I became extremely committed to the idea that my professional life was going to be spent in creating better jobs. I just deeply believe through and through that having a better job is a prerequisite to being a good parent or sibling or son or daughter, to being a better citizen and voter and PTA board member and Rotarian. And if you look at our economy here in the United States over the past 40 years, a lot of the job growth has occurred in ways that are not about creating better jobs. And we've had new business models emerge that really challenge what has been part of the beauty of American capitalism, and certainly in the 20th century, around creating jobs that provide meaning and allow for that employee, that worker, to have dignity and to put food on the table and a roof over a family's head. So coming out of graduate school, I decided to buy a small business. I emailed 20,000 companies from Georgia to Pennsylvania and all sorts of industries, Andrew. You know, I looked at a company that manufactured underwater treadmills. I looked at a business that did motocross TV production, all sorts of different interesting opportunities. The one that spoke to me was a small home care company in Durham, North Carolina. And so back in 2012, I acquired Nurse Care of North Carolina, which was a small single site home care business. From 2012 to 2018, grew that within North Carolina. I opened up a number of new offices, did a few small acquisitions, bolt-ons, if you will. And then in 2018, I was approached by Bain Capital Double Impact. And at the time, that Bain Capital Double Impact Fund was its first fund in that platform. And they really wanted to do something around the social impact theme of aging in place. And so I told them that job quality was our number one, the top part of our mission. And they understood that, agreed with that. And so we went forward, and they identified a wonderful business out of California called Live Home. And so together we acquired Live Home. And that combination of Live Home and Nurse Care of North Carolina in 2018 really formed the basis for what became Arosa when we rebranded in 2021. In those intervening years from 2018 to 2021, we had done a number of acquisitions, some in new geographies like Nashville, Tennessee, and Orlando, Florida, some in existing geographies where we deepened our presence, like in Chicago, and turned around. And in late 2020, we had a bunch of different brands. And while we were operating as one entity, we really felt the need to unify our brand, our most importantly, our values. And so we rebranded as Arosa. And so here we are in 2023, and we operate in 32 markets across 10 states. So we like to say coast to coast, you know, California, Nevada, North Carolina, Tennessee, Florida, Texas, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Jersey. And we really are, we're probably a top 10 non-medical private pay provider. If you think about independent non-franchise companies on the non-medical home care side, and we are number one in terms of private pay care management. So we only provide those services in the 32 markets that we're in. So it is both exciting and daunting to think about the 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 other markets that we are not yet in. So lots and lots of room to grow and really the imperative to do so.
Okay, thank you for that background. I've never heard the 20,000 emails note before. I'm glad you said that, and I do think you're a little bit insane, but I do appreciate the
Andrew, you probably received one of the emails yourself saying that I'd like to buy Donlin Incorporated.
So I want to get back to a lot of the things that you just mentioned, but firstly, looking at what's going on currently at Arosa, you know, how are things generally going so far this year? We're about halfway through 2023. What have been your biggest focuses?
So my biggest focus for the year has been building an executive team that is going to grow with the company for a long while. I have an extremely long horizon here myself. I like to say I'm 42 years old and I suck at golf. So, you know, I see building Arosa for decades to come. And I have certainly come to appreciate over these past 10 years that building a really, really strong leadership team is my number one priority. And so this year we brought on a new CFO, Richmond McMurray, who's actually a graduate school classmate of mine. So thrilled to welcome him to the team in May. And then here in June, brought on our first ever chief marketing officer. So Catherine Locker is an experienced, dynamic leader who just joined us this month. And so going from Rebecca, our COO, and myself at the beginning of the year to a team of four, it has been a big priority for us. At the same time, we are really focused on a couple things with the core business. One is opening up de novo offices. So for us, a de novo office means planting a flag in a new geography where we weren't previously operating. And so we have several of those that are under a year old, Reno, Nevada, Jacksonville, Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Clarksville, Tennessee. And then we've got several more on the drawing board. So we're going to open up in Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to open up a couple offices in our Los Angeles metropolitan area, which is one of our bigger markets that we're currently in. And then and we're pushing forward from there.
Okay, great. So I think there's a few interesting things there as well. Have you found generally the process of building a solid executive team to be a tough process?
It has been. I would tell you, Andrew, I think it's a couple of factors playing into that. One is that our industry, and really here I'm talking about the non-medical home care industry, because too often we get lumped in with home health and hospice, which are just very, very different in terms of their dynamics, in terms of the organization's core capabilities. But when we think about non-medical home care, most businesses in our space are probably $1 to $2 million in revenue. And this is borne out with the Home Care Pulse benchmarking study and other industry data points. And so when you think about the number of people who have, the number of leaders who have run 10 or 15 or 20 or 50 or $100 million companies in our space, it's a really, really small pool. So there's not a lot of industry expertise from which to pull when thinking about this executive pool. I would also point out that in a wildly competitive hiring environment of the past few years, where tech companies, financial firms, and really many others just were extremely aggressive about hiring, it's been difficult to find folks who, you know, are extraordinarily talented and buy into the mission that we have and are up for the challenge, which really is overcoming some very big obstacles in our space to scale and to long-term success. And so I feel extremely fortunate and energized to have the team that we do have at Arosa. And I think it's a real differentiator for us as an organization.
You said last year at the Home Care Conference that the lack of innovation around business models in our space is devastating. Obviously, you're referring to non-medical home care there. Can you explain that to our audience?
Happy to. Andrew, it's no secret what our business model is in non-medical home care. It is to build 2x and to pay X. So, for example, if in Chicago we are billing $36 an hour, then generally we're paying about $18 to a caregiver teammate. You know, maybe in San Francisco we'll bill $40 and we'll pay $20. And in a place like Durham, North Carolina, maybe it's billing $30 or $32 and paying $15 or $16 an hour. The reality is that 2x, that bill rate, is too expensive for probably 95% of Americans or American families. And yet the need for the service that we provide, that non-medical home care, that personal care assistance, is universal. So 100% of the population needs what it is that we offer. Maybe 5%, maybe 10% can afford to pay out of pocket. Maybe some percentage, 10 or 20%, you know, are qualifying and eligible for Medicaid services. And that means that a vast majority, that 75 to 85% probably of American families are just struggling to provide that support that their loved one needs, you know, as they age. And that is where we see people going to assisted living or going into nursing facilities when that's not their preferred place to age and to live out, you know, what should be some of the most fulfilling and happiest years of one's life. So the bill rate is too high at 2x. And then we need to call a spade a spade. And X, what we are paying our caregiver teammates, is not a living wage. And we need to face up to that fact. We need to come up with models to do better. It is, and this, when it gets to job quality, it is in part the wage, and there's no duck in that, but it's also the job structure. So our caregiver teammates are variable hour, meaning sometimes they might work 40 or 50 hours a week if they have a consistent client. And that is a long-term client, but sometimes their hours might bounce around. And that might be 40 or 50 hours one week. It might be 10 or 20 or 30 hours the next week. You know, sometimes we might be offering days. Sometimes we might be offering nights. A client might be 3 or 4 miles away. And other times we may be asking a caregiver if he or she is willing to drive, you know, 20 miles or 30 miles, and maybe that takes an hour. And so I think there are a lot of structural issues with that business model where we bill too much for most clients to afford. We pay too little for our caregiver teammates to have a living wage without the job security that would be provided by a hospital or an assisted living or a retailer, where there'd be that much more predictability in terms of earning. And then also culturally, I would say that a lot of companies in our space don't do a great job of making teammates feel like they are part of something bigger than themselves. We all want to be part of a team. We all want to know that what we're doing is meaningful and is appreciated. And our teammates know that and have a high degree of satisfaction from the actual work that they're doing, because I do think that most of our clients are appreciative. I don't know that culturally we're at a place as an industry where we have figured out how to share that gratitude given the distributed nature of our workforce. And that's something that we have to continue to work on, because we do have very, very hard operational challenges. I ask every new hire what 24 times 7 is, and if they say 168, if they know that there are 168 hours in a week, I share, you know, I smile and I say, well, you're either really good at math or you've been in home care before, so I appreciate, you know, I appreciate you either way. But, you know, we are around the clock operation. Every single one of our teammates showing up on time with a smile, ready to really get a great bit of work done that is very, very hard oftentimes, hard emotionally, hard physically, you know, that's a tall order. And so it's a simple business model, but it's difficult to execute. And fundamentally, I think that we need innovation around that business model. We need to figure out ways to break that bill 2X, pay X conundrum that I described.
So how are you reacting to that? What are some things that you may be doing differently at Arosa because of that reality and because of that concern that, you know, it's an industry ripe for disruption?
Yeah, we are experimenting with new models. You know, we do have pilots underway with different in-home technologies and thinking about how we can package that with the other hands-on services we are providing. We are big believers in the importance of care management. Andrew, as I mentioned at the outset, we are the largest provider of private pay care management in the country. And so many families could benefit from having an incredibly experienced guide through the aging journey. So our care managers come from a variety of backgrounds, social workers, nurses, occupational therapists, gerontologists, and the value that they bring to families, whether that is an hour a week, whether that is, you know, a bunch of time right around an acute episode, like a hospital discharge, whether that is just checking in once a quarter with that otherwise healthy 83 or 85 year old who's a planner and wants that extra support. Universally, our care management clients are thrilled with the value that they get from having an incredibly experienced professional on their team. So I do think that is, you know, I think there are a few different ways to think about innovation. One is new service lines and care management being one of those. Another that we are looking at is luxury adult day. There are a few other service lines that we are evaluating. Another way to think about changing the business model is to divorce the reality that what most families and clients care about is not necessarily the number of hours of care that a caregiver is there in the home. It's much more about the goals around safety or happiness and quality of life. And to the extent that we, Arosa, or we as an industry can figure out how to package, deliver, and sell our services that speak to different objectives besides just sheer number of hours of care, I think that would be a huge, huge step forward for our industry. And Andrew, I ask you, I mean, you know, you and I are not thinking about our retirement just yet, and we're a long way off from probably needing or wanting home care, non-medical home care. But when you think about retirement, you are not, you know, you think about being 90 years old, you're not counting down the days until you can get, yes, I can't wait till I can get 10 or 12 or 24 hours of care a day. that's not a goal. A goal might be that you want to play golf well into your 80s, or a goal might be that in your 90s, you want to make it to a great grandchild wedding or birth. A goal might be that, you know, you want to live in your home, you know, until you pass. So there are different goals that people have, and we're not framing and packaging our services really structured around those goals. I mean, we are coming at it with a one size fits all solution, which is just the number of hours of care you get. And I look forward to in the years ahead, figuring out how to turn that on its head and to really better understand what it is that clients want and how we can deliver it.
Yeah. And I think you have a head start on a lot of other businesses, both in non-medical home care, but also just in home-based care at large, who are recognizing that, you know, that care management piece is something they need to be more focused on. And like you mentioned, they need to be more focused on what matters to the clients and not just making sure that they're quote unquote healthy enough to get through the day. You definitely got a leg up there for now.
Well, absolutely. And Andrew, focusing on what the client wants, this is a privilege that we have from a very deliberate strategic choice, which is to focus on the private pay part of the market. You know, I think so much of healthcare today, I mean, just the overwhelming majority of healthcare in our country today is paid for by some third party, some distant third party, whether that is United Healthcare or Cigna or Aetna, or whether that's the VA, or whether that's Medicaid or Medicare or, you know, Medicare Advantage. The reality is that we get to stay laser focused on what it is that our client families want. And we have that immediate feedback loop every single day. And so, you know, I can share with you, I get a lot of questions when I'm at conferences or talking to potential lenders or, you know, other financial partners about, why don't you want to go deeper into government programs? Why don't you want to contract with healthcare insurance companies? And the reality is that I think we have a giant opportunity to innovate and to grow clients, and by treating them as the consumers that they are. And I think so much of what is wrong with our healthcare system is the number of things that our healthcare system is willing to pay for that people, patients, don't really want. And then there are other things that our healthcare system is not willing to pay for that people really do want. And so that feedback loop around what clients desire is something that in the private pay world, you know, with the flexibility we have, is something I treasure. So for example, if starting a service where we visit clients with pets, you know, where we bring a golden retriever by to go brighten up a 90-year-old's day, well, and that 90-year-old or 90-year-old's family is willing to pay us $100 for that visit, great. And we can deliver that profitably, great. We should do it. And that's something that we don't have to go to Washington, D.C. to ask permission to try and to make happen. And so care management is sort of the perfect epitome of that, if you will, Andrew, because our care managers get to solve our clients' problems. That is their job, is to solve problems and enhance quality of life. And they have such carte blanche in terms of how they do that. And our care managers are incredible at understanding how to make our clients' days that much better. And so that's why we really believe there's a huge space for growth and for continued good work for our care managers and for really the whole care management industry.
Okay, so according to HCP's benchmarking report, which you mentioned earlier, turnover went back up this year, a little bit of a spike after a couple years of leveling out at a more manageable level from 2019 to 2021. Has that been consistent with what you've seen at your company, or do you feel like you're faring a little better than the industry at large?
So we're faring a little bit better than the industry writ large. And I also think that those statistics, you know, from the past couple years with the pandemic are a bit misleading, Andrew. My hunch is that what went on during the pandemic with home care companies is that a lot of people dropped out of the workforce. As we all know, in labor workforce participation rates went down significantly. And so I think that you had a bunch of people drop out of the workforce, and that, you know, that was a contributor to turnover. But then those that stayed were probably with more consistent clients and longer term. So imagine that caregiver who'd been with a client for several years pre-pandemic probably stayed consistent and, you know, did really heroic work through the pandemic with those clients, given the relationships that they already had. I think here coming out of the pandemic that we have seen some of those workforce participation rates come up. So we have more people coming back into the workforce in the back half of 2022 and certainly here into 2023. And so I actually think it's a reasonably natural, you know, result of more people coming back into the workforce that turnover rates would climb a little bit. So I'm actually encouraged by the trajectory of where we're at in terms of our labor force. The doldrums of mid to late 2021 and early 2022, when we just truly could not get anyone to apply for jobs, in most of our markets, those days are behind us. You know, I certainly think that it is going to remain tight for the foreseeable future in terms of the workforce. That's going to be the case until and unless we have new business models. That is going to be the case until or unless we have significant immigration reform. That's going to be the case until unless we have a recession and more unemployment, which no one hopes for. So, you know, the most optimistic of any of those would be that we come up with new business models where it's not necessarily all about one person with one client for 12 hours, but we think about different ways to leverage our workforce, to increase productivity, to serve more clients with one caregiver teammate. That's where a lot of our thinking and efforts are going towards.
Okay. And in terms of growth, which I'm also curious about, you mentioned that you're probably in the top 10 in terms of non-medical, non-franchise providers across the country. Obviously, you mentioned de novos earlier. I'm curious, though, where and how you want Arosa to grow over the next 5 years or so.
Yeah. So I think it's helpful, Andrew, just to lay out a bit more about our history to understand also where we're going. So we do have a lot of acquisitions in our history, and we do have that muscle. So we've done, I think it's 16 acquisitions over the past 5 years. And we did just acquire a very small, but very high quality agency in Salt Lake City, which was really aligned with how we think about the world, because they have both home care and care management already in place as those two service offerings. Most of those acquisitions that we did were in 2019. And then obviously with the pandemic in 2020 and 2021, and also with the amount of work that we put into integrating those acquisitions, you know, we've shifted a lot of our focus to planting new flags and to opening de novo offices. And so what we're doing right now is we are honing our playbook as to how to do that successfully. We are looking at the data to better understand which variables, which factors are most important for site selection and for, you know, how we introduce ourselves to a new market. And so while right now we are in the order of opening up 4 to 6 new offices a year, I would anticipate that by 2025, we have doubled that pace. So, you know, I see this year, next year, probably being in that, 5 new office opening range, you know, plus or minus 1 or 2 offices. But I do anticipate by 2025, 2026, that we are doubling or tripling that rate, towards 10 to 15 new offices a year, you know. And so I think that is a very sustainable and achievable target for us you know, where we can do that for the next 5 to 10 years. And when you add that up, that's going to be very, very significant growth. You know, if we are successful in opening 40 to 75 new offices over the next 5 years or so, then that's going to more than double the footprint of our company and double the size and the impact of what we're doing.
So we talked a lot about some of the biggest threats in the home care industry. I'm curious, do you think that the opportunity and the threats are sort of similar in the fact that, you know, there are ways to innovate, there are ways to meet that demand in different ways than maybe the industry has explored in the past? What do you think the biggest opportunity is for the industry over the next 10 years or so?
I'll give you two examples of threats I see. One example of a threat that I think we are experiencing right now. I mean, so maybe it's more than a threat, but it's a reality and it's a negative for us as an industry right now. Is we have had significant inflation in terms of our bill rates these past couple of years. So a lot of home care companies are patting themselves on the back that they have maintained gross margins and probably net margins through a difficult period. But a lot of that has been because we have passed through bill rate increases to our clients. But if you look at the data and talk to a lot of home care company owners, in reality, we are trading those higher bill rates, but also serving fewer clients and in a lot of cases, serving those clients that we do have with fewer hours. So what that tells me is that a lot of clients are getting priced out of the non-medical private pay service, and they are probably going to the gray market where they are hiring someone directly that they find on Facebook or finding a flyer on a church bulletin board or a Panera bulletin board and cash under the table. And really that's not, I don't think that we as an industry should be happy about that reality, you know, and ultimately it's incumbent upon us to prove our value to families and to create services that are affordable to more families and to more clients, because the need is, as I said earlier, universal. So I think that inflation on bill rate and the commensurate rise and growth in the gray market, if you will, is something that we really have to be cognizant about. And there's no, this is not a problem just for one company to solve, but it is where we need innovation industry-wide to overcome that. That's one reality today. Another threat that I think is fading a little bit as reality has and history, I guess, recent history has shown us, is thinking that innovation is synonymous with technology and even more specifically software. There is no software system that is going to solve these challenges that I was mentioning around our business model. There's no software solution that you press a button and you create a company culture that, you know, makes everybody happy. There's no software solution that, you hit enter and you have a new business model that increases the productivity of a caregiver team by 30%. And so, you know, there are a bunch of companies that raised money from venture capitalists in 2014, 2015, 2016. Most have exited the market. Some are struggling to gain traction. So I think that innovation has to be a broader tent and it has to have a broader meaning than just software. The number of pitches I get for recruiting or applicant tracking software, the number of pitches we get for online training software, the number of companies that come to us wanting to introduce the latest and greatest scheduling software that promise there will never be a call out again and you'll never have to have a staffing coordinator, a care specialist to call a caregiver teammate to schedule them. I think that there's been too much of a belief, if you will, that software will solve the hardest problems that we face. And I don't think that is true. We're certainly not in isolation. You know, and we see that as well with some of the hardware solutions. I'm a big believer that we do need monitoring solutions in the home. We need a suite of services that does encompass some home-based technologies. But in and of itself, these technologies, you know, are just one piece of the puzzle. And I can tell you, it's really hard for home care companies to resell or even to introduce home-based technologies to our clients. There's more resistance, more varied obstacles than almost could be imagined. And so I just don't want investors, I don't want the public, I don't want other companies thinking, oh, you know, there's just some magic bullet technology that's going to solve a lot of the struggles, because I don't think anything is that simple, and there's no one size fits all. That's for sure.
Okay, great. And then what about the opportunity?
Yeah. So take the flip side of that, as I started to allude to. I mean, I do think that there are opportunities for services that bring in a number of different disciplines, a number of different lines together. So one of my goals for the years ahead would be to figure out how to offer a family a combination of home care management, home-based monitoring technology, you know, and package that together into a daily or weekly or monthly rate that is not all about how many hours do we have a caregiver there in the home with your loved one. Because again, like I said, for most families, for most clients or seniors, the number of hours that someone is there is not that's not the goal in and of itself. Their goal is higher quality of life. So, you know, I think that if we can package services in a more multifaceted, more sophisticated way, that we should be able to really raise the overall quality of what it is we're delivering. And certainly listening to our clients, listening to their families, you know, is a huge first step in that. So I think that's a giant opportunity. You know, and then there's the opportunity to create new service lines as well. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, adult day is one that I think is really interesting, that on the private pay side has not had a lot of new entrants. It has not had, you know, a whole lot of momentum behind it, but I think it's one that, you know, we're going to explore and see if there's a real market for us to go ahead and get after.
Okay, fantastic, Ari. I think we're coming up on time here. Is there anything else that you want to highlight about the home care industry or Arosa specifically?
Andrew, I would just come back to the challenge and opportunity of creating a company where people feel a part of something bigger than themselves. We are in an industry where 90-95% of our teammates work remotely, you know, and in a distributed fashion, and we don't get to see each other every day, every week, or even every month. But it's incumbent upon us as companies, as organizations, to supersede that. And whether that is writing handwritten notes, whether that is throwing that appreciation event where we bring as many people together as possible, whether that is introducing that new benefit, one that we're very proud of is called the Arosa Grant Circle. And this is funded mainly by Arosa employees, also by some of our clients and partners. And it is a grant program where if one of our teammates is facing an emergency, they can apply and receive up to $1,000 grant. You know, things like that, where we are showing our teammates that we're there for one another in times of need, and then showing our teammates that we're there for one another in times of celebration and in times of joy. That's what we think about day in and day out. And that really gets back to that job quality piece, which, as I referenced earlier, is the top part of our mission and really why we do what we do. And so we look forward to continuing to grow. You know, today we're well over 1,000, pushing towards 2,000 Arosa teammates and Arosa care professionals. And, you know, look forward to getting to 10 and 20,000 and then 50 and 100,000 in the years ahead. Really appreciate your continued focus and understanding of our industry, and lots of exciting things to come. And so look forward to continuing the conversation.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Andrew Donlin, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.